Good evening. You are listening to KBOO 19.7 FM, and the show is Feminista Factor. My name is Gabriele, my host is Krista, and tonight's topic is the history of Iranian Jews, and I will introduce a couple of women who have looked at this topic from different angles, but I want to give a little bit of background first. In terms of ancient histories, Jews who had been exiled and persecuted by Assyrians until they were freed when Persian king Cyrus the Great entered Babylon in 539 before the Common Era, and he allowed them to return to Jerusalem. Many Jews had settled in Persia before and continued to do so after that. Among the later were Esther and Mordecai. And of course, according to the Book of Esther, Esther was an orphan raised by her cousin Mordecai. She married the king of Persia and prevented a massacre of Persian Jews which the Grand Vizier Haman was plotting. Mordecai then became the Grand Vizier. And of course, this story inspired the Purim feast. The tombs of Esther and Mordecai are in Hamadan, Iran. After, in the history following those events, for a long time after that, Jews fared no different than any other religious minority in Iran, in Persia. Some enjoyed positions of privilege in the courts of kings, in government and military. Such tolerance was not unusual in the area later known as the Middle East. A major change came with the Safavids in the 16th century when Shiism was introduced as a state religion. A religious hierarchy was established with unlimited power and influence in every sphere of life. And this was the first time the concept of ritual pollution, najis, of non-Muslims was introduced. Suffering and persecution of all religious groups, particularly Sunnis, became the norm. Since then, Jewish chronicles are full of accounts of massacres, forced conversions into Islam, and mistreatment. The end of the 19th century is the beginning of a fundamental change in Iran and the start of a constitutional movement. Jewish partisans, along with other minorities, participated in that movement, and there's a rich history of Iranian Jewish lefty and internationalist activists. The Pahlavis, who were the dynasty between 1925 and 1979, are often accredited with having improved the climate for Iranian Jews. And that may be the case, but there also is a shadow side to that, and I'll get to that in a minute. In more recent history, includes the arrest of 13 Jews in 2000 who were charged with espionage for Israel on a rather phony procedure. I believe they have been pardoned and released by now, even though they were convicted. In the 70s, there was still a community of 100,000 Jews in Iran, and now there is 25,000 left. So basically, there is one quarter of the community that existed prior. Still, there are Jews have representatives in the parliament, as do other religious minorities. There's about 100 synagogues, 26 of those are in Tehran. Tehran also has a Jewish school, libraries, actually three Jewish schools, libraries, cultural centers and complexes, a computer center, butcheries, women's youth and student clubs. And I'd like to read some excerpts from a writer named Gina Nahai. She approaches this history from the perspective of a novel writer who writes in a very magical way, and it's quite enticing. She's written several books, but two of them I know have this particular history as a main subject. The first one is called "The Cry of the Peacock," and again, the writer's name is Gina Nahai. The Peacock is the story of a Jew who's 9 years old and living in Esfahan in the ghetto when she marries Solomon the Man. She's a descendant of a 3,000-year-old tribe of Jews, and he's a singer in the royal court, a wealthy man known for his good looks and his charm. A decade later, she would become the first woman in her ghetto to ever have left her husband. And then in 82, as a 116-year-old woman, she is arrested by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard. So this is an excerpt from Gina Nahai's book. In 1939, the Second World War began in Europe. Officially, Iran declared her neutrality in the war. In fact, Reza Shah harbored German agents on Iranian soil and later refused to allow the British access through Iran to Russia. The German minister, Dr. Shah, visited the country and asserted once again that Iranians were pure Aryans, exempt from the provision of the Nuremberg race laws. "It's the end of you all," the merchants in the bazaar told Peacock, without bothering to hide their excitement. "Hitler's taken over the world, and the Jews are as good as dead." They were all her friends. They would have mourned her. But all their lives they had heard the mullahs speak against infidels, and now they could not help but give in to joy in the prospect of seeing Jews eliminated once and for all. In 1941, Germany invaded the Soviet Union. Needing a route through which he could dispatch much-needed supplies for the Russians, Churchill looked once again toward Iran. He asked Reza Shah to expel the Germans from Iran and to provide free access to Allied troops and transport trucks. Reza Shah refused. He never imagined that Hitler might lose the war. Churchill threatened an invasion. Reza Shah ignored him. By the time he realized the scope of the danger he was courting, Allied troops were already descending on Iran. On August 24, 1941, Indian forces under British command entered Iran through the south. The next day, Peacock watched Allied planes fly over Tehran, dropping leaflets. Iran, they said, was an occupied country. Reza Shah had been deposed, whisked from the throne, and shipped away to exile in South Africa. His son Muhammad Reza was placed on the throne by the Allies, then locked up in his palace. Peacock had become to believe the voice on the radio. "In close concert with our Russian ally," the announcer interpreted Churchill's speech before the House of Commons, "we have rooted out the legitimate elements in Tehran." The other book by Gina Nahai is called Moonlight on the Avenue of Fate, and I want to read a little bit from the description of that book. When she is 5 years old, Lily, the narrator of this epic and magical tale, watches her mother, Roxana the angel, throw herself off the balcony of the house on the Avenue of Fate. Roxana has left no farewell, no explanation. Her family's subsequent search for her reveals no body, no sign of a fall, no trace of an escape. The only witness to Roxana's disappearance, Lily will spend the next 13 years looking for her mother, wondering if she's alive, wondering why she left. This is the remarkable tale that follows Roxana, born as a bad luck child in the Jewish ghetto of Tehran, through the opulent world of Iran's aristocracy, into the warehouses of Turkey, and at last to Los Angeles, the city of exiles, where she and Lily are reunited. Gina Nahai tells the story of a courageous cycle of women standing at the edge of the past, reshaping their lives in America. All the main characters in Gina Nahai's novels are women, and they're all strong women, surviving women. They're all sexual, and basically they don't take anything from everybody else, and they are remarkable books. And while Gina Nahai approaches the subject of Iranian Jewish history by telling magical stories, another woman, Homa Sarshar, has chosen oral history as her vehicle. And I had a chance to interview her when she was in Portland in March, so I'd like to play the interview and then talk a little bit more about Homa Sarshar's work.
I'd like to ask you to introduce yourself, since I know very little about you.
My name is Homa Sarshar, and I'm a journalist by profession. I have been in this career for 4 years. I started as a translator from French to Persian in Iran back in 4 years ago in a women's magazine called Zane Rooz. And then I moved on to a daily newspaper called Kayhan, where I was the editor for the family section, and then to National Iranian Radio and Television, where I had my own show as a writer and also as a host of the program. During the revolution, I moved to United States, and for the last 25 years, I have been working as a freelancer for different Persian media, like print media and radio and television.
And would you like to say something about the institute that you founded, and I believe you're still a board member of?
The Center for Iranian Jewish Oral History, you mean? Yeah. This was a necessity, because during the last regime and in the contemporary history, Jews were not that much interested to write about themselves, and nobody else did it. So after the revolution, I find out that as time passes, there are all the people that die and before having time or the opportunity to tell their memories, their memoirs, and the story that they know and how they lived in Iran prior to the revolution. So I copied a project that I was acquainted with in Columbia University, and I read about oral history projects, so I thought this is the best way to do it. So I founded that center, and I have a lot of Iranian young people working with me as a volunteer, and we do interview people, and we have gathered almost 110 interviews on tape, and we also put together a big archive of documents and also photos and pictures and everything about Iranian living, Iranian Jews living in contemporary Iran. And the interviews end up in a 4-volume of Iranian Jews in Contemporary History, volume 1 to 4. And the last publication that we had called Esther's Children, this is a like a coffee table book size with 500 photos and 25 articles about Iranian Jews in English for the younger generation that doesn't know how to read Persian.
And I've seen Esther's Children. It really is a remarkable book. And the photo documentation in it is outstanding. How were you able to gather these documents?
Thank you. The editor of the book, as you know, is my son, Homan Sashar. And it took us almost 5 years to put these, to gather one by one, to go to homes and ask people to go through their documents and through their albums and old stuff that they had. And at the beginning, it was not that easy, but as we moved on, people got interested, and right now they're bringing photos. So we have almost 1,600 photos and documents that all has been digitized and scanned and put in computer. So we were going to preserve them. And finally, this will end up in one of the university's oral history department.
And I believe that some people in this country may not even be aware that there was and is a thriving Iranian Jewish community and what some of the history is. Could you say a word about the history of Jews in Iran, starting with the ancient part, maybe?
Well, this is the oldest Jewish community in the whole world. The Jewish people were in Iran since 2,700 years ago. When they moved on from Babylon, and this Cyrus the Great, the king of Achaemenid king, freed them from being slave and freed them from Babylon, and they went back to Iran. And most of them find their way out to Jerusalem from Iran, but a lot of them stayed there because they found the country very welcoming to the immigrant people. And they built a city that they called Yahudiyeh, means the city of Jews. And this is the name, the old name of Isfahan. So Isfahan was the first city that the Iranian Jews were there, and they have been there. So we have been there since 2,700 years ago. And Esther, the Queen Esther, who is a Jewish girl that married Ahasuerus, the son of Cyrus the Great, became queen in Iran, and Jews have been living in Iran since then. There have been a lot of ups and downs. There were some time that they were not very prosperous, but other times they were living very good. And at one time, they reached the number of Jews was almost 1 million in Iran. But since the invasion of Islam, this has been the life became a little bit difficult for Jews in Iran, and mostly during Safavid period, which was the very strict time for other minorities living in Iran. And before the revolution, I can say that under Pahlavi regime, it was the most flourishing time for Jews. They became out of the ghettos and Jewish quarters, and they start living a very normal life and became like a normal citizen, So they started a different kind of industry, a lot of like insurance and a lot of manufacturings and like all these distilleries and wineries and other many other industry has been built by Jews in Iran. And they got involved in the social life also and everything, but the revolution happened. And at that time, the number of Jews were almost 100,000 before the revolution, but after the revolution, a lot of Jews fled out of the country. And right now, there is 3,000 left in Iran, living not such a good life.
But then Los Angeles, I believe, has the largest number of Iranian Jews anywhere. Is that correct?
No, Israel has the... Israel has the biggest community. There are almost 300,000 either Jews born in Iran or the descendant of Jews born in Iran. The people who call them Jewish Iranian Jews is 300,000. And after that, Los Angeles is the second biggest community, and New York is the third.
If there is such a thing as like a red thread throughout the interviews you collected and the documents you collected that is particular to the culture of Iranian Jews, what would you say those threats could be?
We knew before the doing the interviews, and we got very confident about that. The two things had been the biggest contribution of Jews in the history of Iran. One is music. And the other one is about doing making wine. So because of the Islam religion in Iran, which either alcoholic beverage or music was like a taboo or something that is haram, which is not allowed. So Jews and Armenians was two minorities that conserved this to, if you can say, art. Art of music and art of making wine and everything. So in this matter, you can trace Jews of being very, very important in these two industry in Iran. And besides that, also there was in the banking and in different kind of in universities, they had the biggest number of educated people in the during between other minorities. And a lot of Jews went to universities, and they have been teaching in universities, and the number of doctors and educated people was very high. So you can trace a big contribution for mostly in contemporary history of Iran.
And you are here in Portland to speak at an event organized by the Iranian Women's Association to honor International Women's Day. Could you share with me some of your role models in terms of women? Who are the women in your life or in previous lives that you look up to?
Well, I have a lot of role models that I admire a lot. But I believe every single woman that has worked hard to help other women to become not a second-class citizen, but a normal citizen, all the activists that worked all around the world, and the people that are still working. In my country, women have been struggling every single day to get the right, to have only the right to live like a normal citizen. Every single one of them is like a role model for me. And I believe that they have been doing a great job, and mostly the younger generation that are student, and they everybody knows that the student movement in Iran wouldn't be so important if the women were not contributing. So in another word, I can find the role model in every single woman in all of the world, but I cannot single out any name to tell you that this particular person or woman have been very important for me, because I see that everywhere in the United States, in Europe, in Iran, in other countries, women are very, very important to bring about the equality that we are looking forward in one day, that the whole world looks at the women as a citizen of the world, but equal to other gender, which is men.
Does the History Project have a website?
Yes. Center for Iranian Jewish Oral History has a website, which is cijoh.org, www.cijoh.org.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your time and your invitation.
This was Homa Sarshar, who was the founder and is still the board member of the Iranian Jewish Oral History Project in Los Angeles, whose the objective of the center is to build a bridge between the older generation and the younger one through the middle generation, and discovering the old and wise people who are walking encyclopedias of knowledge and help compile their experience before it is too late. Her son, Humans Sarshar, is the editor of the book Esther's Children, which is a remarkable photo documentary with over 500 images and historical essays that cover everything from theology, law, wedding, and other life-marking rituals, the history of the Alliance Israelite Universelle in Iran, the involvement of Iranian Jews in Zionism and in the left, sports, role of women. It's an amazing book. And the website she mentioned, just to repeat that, is for the Oral History Society, is cijh.org. One of the Iranian musical greats she mentioned, she talked about, is a man named Mohtasar Khan Nedavut, who lived between 19 and 1990. He was born in Iran, obviously, and he died in California. He was a master tar player, and you heard a little bit of his work at the beginning of the show. And I want to share a story that is only indirectly related to Iranian history, but it's such a remarkable story. This musician, Mohtasar Khan Nedavut, discovered and schooled a woman named Gama Moluk Waziri, who was born in 1903, soon orphaned, and then raised by a grandmother who sang in Islamic ceremonies, where the daughter, Waziri, got her first training. She offered her first public concert in 1924, and she was the first female vocalist in Iran who performed in public without the customary head cover. She was a lifelong supporter of the poor, but herself, she died penniless in 1959. And I could not find an original recording of her work, but I found a recording by Gisa Shakari, who tried to recreate the instrumentation of the time and the style of singing and also the lyrics. And I want to read a very liberal translation of the lyrics. And again, a reminder, this was performed in the early 1920s in Iran. Daughters of Iran, how much longer do you want to remain silent? There is no news, good or bad. Iranian intellectuals, is a woman not considered human? How long do we have to be in hijab? How long are we expected to sleep? It is because of the clergy that we are so corrupted. The country is broken. The people are sleeping. Daughters of Iran, it is time for revolution. How long do we have to be held down? Stand up and take off your dark cover. So this was performed, this was her first public song, actually, by Gama Moluk Waziri in the early 1920s. And we will end the show with that song. You were listening to Feminista Factor on KBO 90.7 FM. Check out your program guide for next month, because we will actually be able to extend our hours on Fridays. And we always welcome new members to the collective. Oh.
Thank you.